Welcome back, AIMP Nashville Pubcast listeners. This is your host, Tim Hunzi. Glad to have you with us. On today's episode, we have Chris Lamb. He's the EVP GM of Big Machine Record Group, and we're going to talk today about radio promotion. I'll be honest, this is something I knew little about most of my years, but we are going to peer behind the curtain and talk to Chris on how you get a song to number one and what their role is in the cog of the machine. It's a great episode. I think you're going to learn a lot. So buckle in, sit down, and enjoy the ride. Describe what it is promotion, which I realize that role has transitioned. If you want to add that in, like kind of what it was to what it's kind of leaning into, feel free to jump in on that train as well, because I want to dive into that too. So give me a, what's your day generally like?
Yeah, man. Well, I mean, so here's the deal. So promotion typically refers to radio promotion. I look at all promo people as sellers of music. The reality is the reason why we've been hyper-focused in on radio as a platform is because it's been the dominant medium for the past 7 decades, right? So it's evolved significantly because, you know, obviously, you know, 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, really, it wasn't until the 2000s where things began to significantly shift with, you know, the origin of Napster and then, you know, digital song sales. And then obviously, as we've seen that evolve to streaming, et cetera. But the reality, what it comes down to is that with radio being the main medium of audience exposure previously, historically, you had a promo team that worked directly with radio stations to position the music on their terrestrial radio playlist. How it's evolved now, you know, obviously radio is a massive priority for us. But at the same time, you know, we've gone from those traditional platforms of audience exposure, which is obviously TV and print and radio. And now we've gone to 1,000 different platforms. And so instead of fishing in 3 lakes, we're fishing in 1,000 lakes. And of course, we have to make sure that we're fishing with the right bait. Our promo team does specifically still work with their relationships at terrestrial radio. And then of course at Big Machine, we have our marketing team and our streaming team and our digital marketing team. And we do digital advertising and every vertical that you could possibly think of. We have a representative that is an expert in that space to make sure again, that we are, you know, properly positioning our music appropriately. If that makes sense.
Really fun stuff. So let's talk some basics. Like how does your job start? Like kind of walk me through the process. Like, you know, are you delivered a final record or are you involved in the creative process? And then who tells you what to do, or are you involved in helping decide what songs you're going to use? Cause I've realized that's the hardest thing to me is what's going to be the single, right? To me, it's still to this day, 30 years in, you can listen to a whole album or, you know, I guess we don't always call them albums anymore, collection of songs that your artist has and go, that's the one, right? So walk me through your process on how you go, okay, here's the music. Where does that go to getting a number one? How does that process work for you?
Yeah, I mean, so my process, you know, back also to in my responsibilities for solely promotion was more so just receiving the song from Scott and Allison, obviously those in our creative team and in our team. And what I mean by that is not, you know, there are some labels and label groups, of course, that their A&R team will just say, this is the song. By the way, there's a way in which to where that always works. Ours has always been more collaborative. Now I will say, of course, there's been times in which to where they're like, this is the single, but in so many cases, you know, again, it's one of the many things that I love about Big Machine Label Group is that we really do everything in the spirit of collaboration. And so it's great to get people's opinions and just kind of, you know, hey, what is going to work? And let's then maybe go out and, you know, position a song with some trusted individuals that we have in the radio space and see what their thoughts are on it. So definitely in some cases we have the opportunity to maybe identify from a body of work what we feel like has the best ability to be successful. And then in some cases, of course, you know, a promo executive's role is in some cases just, this is the single and go work it. And again, there's pros and cons to both of those. And it you know, has a tendency to all work out.
I mean, you may not want to answer this question. So if not, you have full authority to go, I don't want Is it really hard to work something you go, I don't know about that, but it's my job. I'm going to work it. Is that a tough gig?
Well, dude, the answer is yes and no. And from my perspective, great promo people, like the one thing that you have that you can never obviously sacrifice is your integrity. And anyone that's selling music, if every single song that you touch, you're sitting out there and saying, oh my God, this is the best record in the world, right? Also, the wonderful thing about music is art is subjective. So I may love something that, I mean, trust me, dude, I've had a lot of records that I've represented that I've been infatuated with that did not become, you know, hit songs the way that we would, you know, define a hit song. And then there's been songs that I've been like, dude, this is not my favorite track. And they've become like monsters. You know what I mean? So that's the cool thing about art in general. But no, I mean, a great promo person and a great seller of music in general has the ability to look at the appeal of a song and understand that appeal over perhaps what their own perspective is. And then based off of that appeal, find a way to create a connection between the gatekeepers of whatever platform that you're seeking exposure on to the artist and that track, you know? So, I mean, listen, there's the only time that I ever, full transparency, get grumpy about working something is if the artist is just an asshole. You know what I mean? Like if they're not a good human being and they don't treat their team correctly, or, you know, you just like, and by the way, the good thing about Nashville is that is so few and far between, but inevitably it's happened with us. You know what I mean? But that's the only time where I'm kind of like, ugh. Yeah. But every other case, man, you know, if you don't love it, you can find a way as to why someone else would love it.
Yeah, it sells. It's part of sales. And I want everybody, I always like to take little moments to take note for anybody listening that wants to be an artist and wants to do that. I repeatedly say, be kind. These people are your team, going to work for you. And we all have moments and all that, but there's nothing better than just treating your team well and greasing the wheels and doing the work. So that's super important. You mentioned something and I want to touch on, you know, you said, you know, a hit song. What defines a hit for you? What makes something feel hitty? And that can be something like you can use data or like when you're working on radio, what starts going, you start going, oh, because, you know, you hear a lot when you're talking about to radio teams, talk about research or, you know, the different data that you guys use. Maybe break into some of that, like how you can start to see when something's taken off in your world.
Yeah. I mean, now obviously we're operating in such a unique space compared to what it was 10, 15 years ago, because we have so many different data points from a streaming perspective. Obviously engagement on social media, you know, how many times a sound has been used in short form content on the various different social platforms. The radio exposure, of course, the chart is obviously a map of, at least if nothing else, what the chart is a map of audience exposure. And so you're aware, like we've got, you know, the media base and the Billboard chart. The media base chart's a point based chart, meaning that every time that your song plays, you generate like points. And those points are the same regardless of when the song is actually played. It could be 6 o'clock in the morning or it could be 11 p.m. at night. You're going to get the same amount of points that is unique to the radio station that played board. It's an audience variable. And that audience variable is uniquely different than at 6 a.m. during like a morning drive versus 11 p.m. During like the evening hours. So, but I will say, regardless of those charts are obviously representatives of how much audience the song has. And of course the song with the most amount of audience, or in the case of media base, the most amount of points, is number one. And so, you know, there's a lot of different metrics to determine what a hit is. I think that a hit may in some cases be in the eye of the beholder. In my opinion, obviously having a number one record, having something that has generated a significant amount of revenue, and obviously that revenue is from, you know, consumption and streaming, that feels like a big hit. To put it in perspective, Carly Pearce, her last single with Chris Stapleton, We Don't Fight Anymore, obviously gained a significant amount of fan and industry acclaim. It was a driver for her album Hummingbird. It generated over 200 million streams. It was nominated for a Grammy. It peaked inside the top five at radio. That checks all the boxes, in my opinion, as to what is a hit, you know? But then listen, man, I remember back in the day, you know, Rascal Flatts, one of my favorite songs, I'm Moving On.
Oh.
And that was a song that peaked at number four, you know? So at the same time, there's an emotional connectivity, I think, that people have with that song. And is what we, I think probably like the theme of what we've been saying quite often, like there's, you can hear that song and you can probably go back in time into a place that you were in your life, maybe when you first heard it or when that, that song was really, you know, getting a frequent amount of exposure. That was a hit song, regardless of whether it, you know, peaked at number one. Obviously it was a big catalyst for Flatts as they moved from that debut album into their next. It had a lot of mass audience exposure that took them to the next level. So that's a hit song. So I guess the short form answer is hits come in multiple different shapes and sizes, but you know what it is when you see it.
Love it. So in your journey as a promo guy, you know, in the publishing community, we work with one another and, you know, we do a lot of collaborative work on co-writes and we help each other try to get cuts and stuff. Do promo teams outside your own building work with one another? Do you guys ever talk to one another? Is there like competition? I know we're all super competitive, but is there times that you guys work together on anything? Or like, I know there's a lot more collaborations, you know, with artists. How does that process work?
Yeah, man. I mean, we do. We collaborate quite a bit. You know, I mean, obviously Big Machine Label Group has got three country imprints. And so in that spirit, we always try to fly in formation and support each other. We also try to be strategic from a timing perspective to stay out of each other's way so that we can like add muscle during what we would call like a push week. If there's a big, you know, coordinated ascension to number one, or a big ad day, you know, where the promo team is impacting terrestrial radio. So we try to fly information and collaborate in moments like that. But then also, I mean, this is not the biggest business in the world, right? And a lot of the people that are here, as we mentioned earlier in your podcast, it's like the common denominator is our passion. Like we do this because we love to do it and because we love the art of music. So because of that, you have a tendency to work with the same people for a long period of time. I love it. Cause again, I've been here for quite a minute, like literally, dude, I'm being 42 years old. I've been at Big Machine Records for 13 years. Borchetta raised me in many, many instances, you know, again, back to that whole people are the product and the environment that they're raised in. But, a lot of the folks that I get to work with that would work for, I guess, what we would call competing music companies are dear, dear friends of mine. And so there always is that collaboration. It's always great. I mean, here's the reality. We always want to win. And so I feel like my main thing, man, is that we live in a world of abundance. And there's some people out there that are super territorial about their slice of the pie. But I know what I can do is I can grow the pie, make the pie larger and make it more available. I want my pie. I want you to have your pie too. And so there's a way, you know, for us all to win simultaneously in some cases. But don't get me wrong, dude. If there is a winner, I want to be the winner.
Because you ain't first. We know that you're last.
Exactly.
Give me a definition. You mentioned push week. You hear that a lot too. Can describe for my listeners, what exactly is a push week?
I don't think that anything is worth doing unless you do it with intention. And so as you know, the promo teams develop plans of what the radio single looks like over its life cycle, right? You get to a place on the life cycle, you know, usually when you're crossing into the top 15 and then the top 10, to where you're looking at like where you're going to land the plane. And so you identify the week that is probably the best based off of your overall audience exposure that you have on the record. And what I mean by that is like, when you go back and we talk about the 166 radio stations that report to the Media Base and Billboard charts collectively, right? Well, if you're working a record for, you know, let's say hypothetically 26 to even some cases 50 weeks, depending upon the track, you're going to have stations that came out and supported the record in a really high frequency early on. You're going to have stations that maybe didn't support the record for, you know, 20 of those weeks, right? So they're going to be a little more fresh in their exposure. And so it's smart to make sure that you're coordinating your efforts as much as possible, as much as what you can coordinate it to where you can reach, you know, maximum exposure during a given period of time that then accomplish your goals of getting a number one record, or in some cases people will do top five pushes, et cetera. But Tim, it's important to know the media base chart starts on Sunday and it ends Saturday at midnight. Both charts are obviously a 7-day chart. Media base starts on Sunday and ends on Saturday. And Billboard starts on Friday and it ends on Thursday. So you identify this date range to try to be as, again, strategic as possible to have your exposure on your record in a max capacity during that time so you can muscle up and ring the bell at number one.
The AIMP Nashville Pubcast is hosted by yours truly, Tim Hunzey. Executive producer, Brandon Harrington. Mixing and editing by Casey Porter. And this has been a Dime Collective production.